This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle, Friday edition of the program. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up on the program today, an old favorite here. 3 o'clock. I may just step out of the room and let you two go at it.
Prepare yourselves.
It's Dave and Dave. Dave Wyman and Dave Craig. The interaction is always priceless. It's one of those ones where I sit back like I'm watching a movie and the interaction just... It's better in person because the looks you give and the frustration and everything that comes out is just priceless.
Well, and he calls it my constipated look. But, you know, when you listen to him, you'll understand why. Like today, I mean, perfectly fine, good conversation. Yeah, I'll come on. And at some point, I called him my man, which I didn't. I go, oh, man, I really appreciate it, my man. Is he like, yeah, no problem, blah, blah, blah. You know, we text each other. I get a text like 5 minutes later. Don't ever call me my man, is what he said to me.
So that will be part of the intro today.
It will.
When we bring him on. My man, Dave Craig, our man. He'll join us at 3 o'clock. John Clayton will join us at 4 o'clock. We got mean text today, so you guys can get a jump on that if you haven't already been submitting your hurtful things throughout the week. 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line. We'll do that in the 5 o'clock hour. But Mariners get back in the win column last night, Dave. It was an impressive game on a couple of different notes. First of all, Sheffield looked like it was going to be a rough go. Second inning happens, two home runs, two solo shots, and I'm just thinking, okay, he's not fooling anybody. This is bullpen, get ready. It's going to be a long night. And he pulled it together and minimized the damage. I mean, those were the only two runs they had the entire night. And then the bullpen comes in and goes 3 1/3, giving up no hits, no runs, no walks, and 3 strikeouts combined.
It's unbelievable.
That's impressive.
Yeah, well, and the start, like you said, I mean, in the second inning, Upton and Walsh both homer, and you're thinking, oh, boy, here we go. He struck out Ohtani 3 times, and yeah. I'll tell you, Ohtani looked confused. I mean, he really dazzled him with those pitches. So it was impressive. And he looked like, you know, and you could tell how much it got him fired up. And just seeing Ohtani look kind of foolish at the plate, which is saying a lot, I think. Man, he is an impressive-looking guy.
He's a big dude.
He's huge. And I think the thing that makes him look so big, his face looks like he's 12 years old.
Yeah, he's 26. He's 6'4". He's listed at 6'4", 210.
Wow.
And I think he's pitching tonight, right? Is he? Yeah, so he's pitching tonight.
Wow. Yeah, it's very impressive. I think, you know, outside of, you know, a lot of the Mariner players, he's my favorite baseball player just because it's always so impressive. I mean, we talk about these pitchers as if, like, you run them out there, you pitch them, you make sure they don't throw too many, and then you put them in glass. And, yeah, you know, for another week, you don't want them fielding. You know, we found that out with the JT Chagua when he was out there, you know, trying to field. The shift was on, so he ends up catching a pop fly, and that's, you know, so uncommon. You certainly don't have him hit. Although Sheffield was up there looking like he was hunting. He was pretty down in San Diego. Both him and Dunn got hits, but you just don't see that out of pitchers. They're just very fragile. You know, you go out, you pitch them once every 5-6 games, and then you put them away, and it was just – it's just so impressive to see a guy that can come up and hit home runs.
Yeah, he's got a beautiful left-handed swing. He's playing ridiculous ball this year on both ends, pitching and hitting. With the home runs, the power he's shown, he's been out playing in the outfield a couple of times already this season. So he's an incredibly unique player. Whether you love him or hate him, love the Angels, hate the Angels, you have to acknowledge just how unique what he is doing. It's just impressive.
I don't have near the hatred for the Angels. Not near the hatred.
Is there anybody hateable on that team?
Really?
I mean, Canna's really easy to dislike. As soon as you see his face, you're going, I don't like him.
Yeah.
But
starting to not like Manaea either.
Yeah, but yeah. It's easy, and then the Astros make it super easy. But yeah, the Angels. Who do you look at on that team and go, ah? Not really anybody. Trout, likable guy. He's not playing.
Yeah, it used to be the right fielder, the little guy. trying to remember his name.
Oh, you're talking about Cole Calhoun?
Cole Calhoun.
Oh.
I didn't like him.
I'm with you. He killed the Mariners.
Like yeah.
He would kill. He came up. After, he was sent down to AAA. He killed the Mariners before this. He was just, he could be hitting a .150, but when he faced the Mariners, he'd come up with just the worst. The timing couldn't have been worse for the Mariners. He'd come up with a crucial hit. He just did it. I remember him being, he'd just come back from being sent down for 10 days, comes back up, was hitting, I don't even know, 202, something like that.
Yeah.
And then he just lights up the Mariners.
Right.
In the rest of the season, then you follow him a little bit through the rest of the season, he's still struggling. But the Mariners, he owned them. But I'm with you. Cole Calhoun drove me nuts.
Well, and there's a couple of, I think a few years ago, he stole a home run from Kyle Seager out in right field because that's where he played. Not a big guy, but, yeah, he just was one of those. But, yeah, other than that, I mean, I love watching Ohtani. I think everybody loves Trout. Does anybody hate Mike Trout?
I hate
playing
him against the Mariners because he owns them.
He does. But, I mean, it's not like he's some kind of jerk. Or
nah, he's not brash. He's not. He's very understated. He's kind of the Barry Sanders of great players in baseball. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, he's sort of that equivalent. Barry scores a touchdown, just hands the ball to the ref, runs back to the sideline. That's kind of – he doesn't showboat. He doesn't pose on his home run. He's just – he's quiet. He's understated. People say he doesn't have a personality. Whatever. He's a brilliant player. And he's very subdued.
It's a good comparison because, remember, Barry Sanders didn't have a lot of, you know, commercials or reps or anything like that. And the same thing with Trout. I mean, remember, he was in that commercial a few years ago with Andrew Luck where they were out there doing like a disco dance thing. It was for a drink.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was Izzy Hard Seltzer.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Oh, was it Body Armor? Yeah, Body Armor, their drink, their sports drink.
It sold me on it, actually.
Did it?
I went and tried it after that.
It worked.
It's good, though.
Their marketing worked.
Marketing worked.
Yeah, but I mean, other than that.
He did Subway. He had a Subway commercial, too.
Do you have Subway?
Yeah. I'm sure he's got other endorsements, like print ad stuff that we're not aware of. But
seems like he should be more prominent.
Yeah, that'll probably be Tatis, because he's got personality, and he's the young phenom. But as it pertains to last night, you saw it first for Jake Fraley. The three-run home run, which was really, really cool to see.
And the right-hander's 2-2 pitch to Fraley is on the way. Swing and a high fly ball deep in the right field. Going back is Ward looking up, and there it goes. Goodbye, baseball. Jake Fraley with his first big league home run. It's a towering three-run homer here in the top of the fourth. And the Mariners now have the lead 4-2 over the Angels.
Now, that's impressive, and congrats to him, his first career home run in the big leagues. Very cool to see. But what's more impressive, that home run or the fact that he walked two more times and has now walked 15 times in 20 at-bats? He's got 15 walks on the season.
Yeah, so
he's batting 200, but he's got an on-base of 556.
It's amazing, and you know, he still goes and gets. The other thing is
17 times. I'm sorry. No. 15. I'm sorry. He's got 17 career walks, 15 this year. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, he was the DH last night. How about the, you know, before the home run, though? I mean, he calls the timeout and kind of steps away, and it was too late.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they have to come in, and, you know, apparently they put super eye drops in his eyes there because there was something in his eye. And that was kind of a weird moment, too. There was two really weird moments in this. This game where Blowers was like going, what's going on here? What's this? And it was the same thing with Fraley. All of a sudden, you're watching him in the box, and it's like he steps out really late, and you're thinking, what is he doing?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's obviously something in his eye, so the trainer comes out, and the guys in the dugout were saying they liked, I can't remember the trainer's name, but they liked that he got some air time. You know, he went out there with the eye drops, put it in, and I think, was it the next pitch? It was that. Maybe it was a couple later.
Might have been a couple.
That at bat.
I can't remember. But, yeah, that was – what was crazy is one of the walks that he was 1-for-2 on the night, drove in 3, walked twice. And in one of the walks, he was down 0-2 and then worked a walk out of that. That's amazing. Impressive. I don't know if the guy can hit. He hit last night. That's great. He's hitting 200, had very few at-bats so far. So we'll see what he can do at the plate. But just the fact that he's got a 200 average with a .556 on base percentage.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So congrats to Jake Fraley. Taylor Trammell had a hit last night, which was good to see. J.P. Crawford is doing well in that leadoff spot. 3-for-5 last night, couple of doubles. And then you had your top three guys working for you. Crawford, 3-for-5. Haniger, 2-for-5. Seager, 2-for-5. France had a hit. He was 1-for-4. Everybody in the lineup had at least one hit with two exceptions, Godoy and Kelnick, who struck out three times. One walk. So he was 0 for 3 with three Ks and a walk. So he's now down to 107 in terms of his average. I was asking Lefko earlier, what do you think happens first? He drops below 100 or he gets sent down?
He's got about, you know, according to the Taylor Trammell pattern anyway, he's got like six games to go because Trammell was down after 27, and I think he's at 21, 22. I know he took some days off, so.
Trammell was never here average-wise, though. I think when he got sent down, he was at 157.
True.
Something like that. I think
you're right. Yeah, so it's pretty bad. So and the three Ks. So
it's weird that that's kind of what, you know, within the game. I mean, it's awesome they won, and there are so many good things to point out, and we'll get to it. But it's the attention, I feel, is still on Kelnick. Everybody wondering, all right, is he going to break through in this game? Are we going to see something? And, you know, he coaxed a walk there, and I'm on Twitter at the time, and people are celebrating the walk. And
yes.
I'm thinking, this is sort of what it's come to, that just even getting on base any way possible becomes a baby step forward, a celebration. And, okay, nice job, good eye up there, showing good discipline. You know, just really people want him to succeed so badly, and I'm right there with him. I desperately want this guy to succeed.
Yeah.
It's just interesting how much focus, you know, I'm watching everybody else, loving what they're doing, but he comes up. I'm like, okay, let me really focus and see how he looks, see what's going on up there.
Yeah, I mean, he fouled two off, I think, to get to 3-2, or he gets to 3-2, fouling one off, fouls off another one, and then he takes. So, I mean, it was a great walk, but, I mean, that shouldn't be what we're celebrating here.
No. I mean, it's a positive, but it's not about him coming up with a hit. I mean, I don't, at this point, I'm sure he doesn't care. I don't care. He could just bloop one over the shortstop's head or something. Let it fall in no man's land. Just have him see some success out there. Just find a way out there. Because right now it's so few and far between, and you could see how frustrated it is. You could see it on his face. You could see the tension. And watching that average dip, it just it's like there's a countdown clock. Like, all right, when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? Because when he comes up there, I don't have an expectation of success. And more importantly, I don't know if he's got that expectation. I think he's hoping. I think he's working his tail off to achieve it, but I'm wondering if, confidence-wise, he walked up there. I think he probably expected to mash the ball every time he was at the plate. Now I'm wondering where his head's at, what his expectations are.
Yeah, it would be interesting to hear from, you know, Service and whoever's having the conversations with him, where he's at, what it's about. I mean, it's going to be different for everybody. I was talking this morning.
No, that's different, Dave.
Different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you want to hear people argue, by the way. We got back-to-back days, Moyer, then Craig, right?
Yeah.
Those two can get after it, too. So
with each other?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I usually will, like, you know, kind of interject to sort of stoke the fire a little bit.
You'll poke and prod.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe we should get Moyer on. We'll have the trifecta here. It'll be great.
Yeah. But I was talking to Gallant about, you know, for me, the breakthrough, like my rookie year, I told you, I would have got sent down. I would have got sent down if we were in baseball. And it, just for whatever reason, and usually it's just one thing that like triggers it. I was coming back from that horrible knee injury back in college, and the first two and a half games, I just was like, I remember the first game we played Texas, and I had like 14 assists. I never had a solo tackle, you know, and then I just wasn't pulling the trigger. And then it was in a game at Oregon State, down in Corvallis, and a hole opened up, and I just shot through, made a tackle, never looked back. The whole rest of the season, you know, everything went great. And it was just that one thing, you know. And sometimes it's one thing, or sometimes it's a whole bunch of stuff. You know, my rookie year, I went through all this stuff where I got traded and failed the physical and had the shoulder injury. We had a strike, you know, I had surgery, all that stuff came back. And I just got it. It was just, you know, maybe that'll be the case for Kelnick. Maybe next year when he comes back to spring training, he'll just, the game will have slowed down for him. But it's just, again, we talked about it yesterday. He has never struggled like this in his life. That's how he got to the kind of guy, the kind of star that he is, number three prospect at one point.
In all of baseball. Not the Mariners' number three.
No. Yeah, all of baseball. So he... You know, that it's going to be ugly. I think it's going to be tough for him. I'm really looking forward to seeing him put together. You know, he's got two games where he's had hits, you know, back to back, but that's it out of the 20-21 games that he's played in. So, you know, maybe it's three that he needs to put together, and that's what you know, changes it for him. But, yeah, he just looks a little bit lost. The look on his face, you almost kind of feel sorry for him. And I think you wrote that in your email. It's like, now I'm kind of feeling bad for the guy.
I do, and I get that that flies in the face of a lot of people. We, you know, people seem to be certain POs, a small group seem to enjoy it. He's the pouty prince or Prince Pouty or whatever somebody was calling him on the text. And sort of you see some people on Twitter feeling like he deserves this. I'm not sure what he did to get on the wrong side of people. He is very confident, and some feel he's arrogant, but has he said anything that made you go, okay, dude, I don't like this guy. I don't know. I mean, some of them are kind of funny, you know, smell you later, and yeah, you do, and that kind of stuff.
You like me, don't you?
It's just, I don't know. I don't have an issue with him. I like that he's confident. I think it'll help him eventually. I'm not looking at this as good. You're getting what you deserve. That's sort of the attitude from some people out there, which I don't quite understand.
Yeah, well, text it in, 710-710. Has he done anything to make you angry? Yesterday I was mentioning that, you know, Tramiel's a little bit different, but I guess he's had a couple moments where he got angry. And
oh, yeah, yeah. I don't know if he threw out an expletive. He might have. He yelled. I remember after one time they struck out, he slammed his helmet down.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think Tramiel is just a totally different cat, but, I texted in, what's the reason why you would root against him? Anyway, or
especially
how is he,
as a Mariner fan.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you want, even if he's not your favorite guy on the team, you want him to succeed. He's on your team. It's going to help your team, and he's going to be part of your future, maybe the biggest part, him and Julio Rodriguez, two of the biggest pieces of your future. Yeah. I really want to see this kid have some success. I do feel bad for him. I understand he's going to make millions and millions, and, you know, he's living a life that we can only dream of. Why do you feel sorry for him? Because he's a human being, man, and he's failing on the biggest stage, and there are a ton of eyes on him. I mean, he's got that notoriety. He's got that reputation, and people are watching him to see how he does. You know, he was part of a trade that the New York Mets were mocked for because of him in a very large way. So there's a lot of attention on him, not just in Seattle, the Mets fans, and everybody's watching to see what he does, and yeah, I feel sorry for the kid.
Referring to the thing with the magic drops, the eye drops, somebody said, are eye drops going to be baseball's version of soccer's magic spray? Remember when people would get hurt out there and they would come out with the aerosol can and spray the ankle whatever, and he would magically jump up in the air and be fine. My other question for you is, why is Kyle Seager trying to steal third?
Because he fancies himself fast.
Did he go outside of what the coaches told him to do there?
I don't know that he's got a green light. I'm pretty sure he doesn't have a green light. They always joke about him on the broadcast. I don't know if he truly believes he's fast. They always joke about him thinking that he's fast.
He doesn't look slow to me.
I wouldn't say he's slow, but he's not a base stealer. He's not, and maybe that's his element of surprise. Like, well, Seager, he's not going to steal.
Yeah.
You know, so he's trying to catch him by surprise. I don't know.
But what a weird play. You know, was it Rendon?
Yeah.
You know, had the tag on him, and then the ball comes out.
Popped loose.
He
and
gets
Seager,
called out. All
Seager's
of a sudden,
helmet got pushed down, so you see he's not even looking at the ball. And
all of a sudden, he's in a rundown between home and third.
While he's kind of pointing at the ump like, hey, wait, he called me out, and what's going on? And Manny Acta's out there, and I'm sitting there watching going, what the hell is happening here? What is going on?
That's basically what Blauer said. He's like, what is going on here? That was bizarre.
Oh, man. That was a weird moment.
But nothing weirder than Kyle stealing third.
Yeah. That is, and it worked out. They got the call right.
Yeah.
206. Failure is always good for a cocky SOB like him, though.
Oh, how do you know? Do we even know him that well? Is he really a cocky SOB?
He's very confident. That's all we ever heard.
When he starts hitting, you're going to love him.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. They'll be wearing this jersey. Let's take two.
Well, Seahawks have a contract extension. No, not Jamal Adams. Punter Michael Dixon. He was on the last year of his rookie deal, so he gets a four-year, $14.5 million extension.
Oh, whew. I'll tell you what. I've been worried about this one.
Come on. He is somebody who kicks the ball that you actually like and are intrigued by.
I'll tell you what. I really am. And I get a chance to go down on the field, or sometimes I'm down there for television or whatever. Raybull and I always go down on the field and, you know, talk to Schneider, whoever down there. Sometimes, you know, I'll go across the field and see old buddies of mine that I know. One of my favorite things, though, is watching him warm up and watching him. One time I counted 4 out of 5. He was punting from about the 50-yard line. He hit 4 out of 5 inside the 5-yard line, and they went straight out of bounds.
Yep.
It hit at either the 1, 2, or 3, like right on the hash mark on the sidelines, and just went straight out. It's impressive. And it's not just, you know, he's doing that. There's no punt rush or anything like that. So I get that. But we see him do that all the time.
He seems incredibly unique. I mean, what he's able to do, the way he can manipulate the ball, he is a weapon. He changes field position. He is an absolute weapon, and I'm glad he's going to be here.
Oh, I remember his rookie year. He had a couple of kicks in the preseason, and Bobby Wagner was on the sidelines. He's not playing in, you know, a second or third preseason game. And I remember Bobby went running down there and, like, grabbed him, you know, on the field and was lifting him up in the air, everything. Because, yeah, I mean, you're a defense, and you're starting, you know, you got somebody pinned inside the five. It's a beautiful thing.
Well, the Lakers were knocked out by the Suns last night. It's the first time in 15 trips to the playoffs that LeBron James has been eliminated in the first round. So now the questions are going to pop up. He's 37. He's going to be 37 in December. He talked about how much he hurt his ankle this series. Could it be it for LeBron James?
You're asking, could this year
retire?
Be it?
Could it be it? Is he done? Is he on the downslide?
I think he's back. Is he on the downslide? Yes. I mean, he's 37. He's not.
Eventually, age will get him.
What he's done at his age is just ridiculous. I understand he does. You don't like him. There are a lot of people that don't like him for whatever your reasons are, their reason. That's fine. What you can't deny is that he is one of the greatest to ever touch a basketball. He is.
That's fine.
And for him to be, this is the first time in 15 playoff first rounds that he's lost.
You think it was because of Anthony Davis?
That's a huge loss. Anthony Davis is such a massive part of what they do, and I give him credit for trying to go, but I mean, he clearly couldn't go, and LeBron is physically compromised as well, and maybe it's going to be more of a chronic thing with him where the injuries are going to start popping up because he plays a lot of minutes, he's played a lot of games, he's older, and the fact that he's played at the level that he has at this age is really, really impressive.
Hey, I appreciate him as an athlete, there's no question. He just acts like he's the most enlightened person in the world. And I don't get that.
All right. Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberKnifeProstate. Will Disley had some comments that might ease our off-season concerns. We'll let you hear what he had to say. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at the top of the hour, the great Dave Craig will join us on the program. Always entertaining. It's one of those times, again, where I'll just... I'm going to play your role. When you and you're watching him and Moyer go at each other, I'm going to play your role and just poke and prod and let you two go at each other. That'll be fun.
Oh, man, he's making me nervous right now.
Why is he texting you?
I just got a text from him. I hope he's not listening.
Oh, come on, my man.
We don't like people listening to the show, okay?
Yeah, not before they come on to the show. I think he's still going to be with us at 3. Is that in question now?
He sends me a text that says, looks like 5, eh?
What does that mean?
Well, I have no idea what that means.
is that his time? Where is he?
What
is he 2 hours ahead?
Does that mean? I just talked to him this morning. He said they're on the same, you know, how Phoenix doesn't change for daily savings. So we're on the same. We should be at the same time.
All right. Well, we'll see what he meant by that text. He's supposed to be with us at 3. Perhaps it'll be at 5. We're not sure. Hopefully Dave will be with us at some point. But Will Disley was on the station yesterday on with Jake and Stacy, and he talked about a couple of different things and addressed the mini camp thing and talked about what they've been able to do virtually and feeling like they could accomplish things virtually.
We kind of decided to just do Zoom. I mean, we operated really well last year. We were able to go through the entire thing and then show up to fall camp and just kind of start ready to go. And so the same kind of expectation was, you know, we're all focused and we're training, we're getting our bodies right. You know, it's so personal. We're able to go with our trainers and, you know, get a throwing session here or there, but be with our families, which we weren't able to do for 6 months. So, you know, it was kind of up to us and we decided to kind of hold out. But there's definitely groups gathering. Seattle's a great place right now. So will definitely be there for many and maybe even possibly sooner.
Definitely be there for many, Dave.
Many. M-A-N-Y or mini camp, M-I-N-I?
Mini. Maybe many, even
many,
sooner.
Many, okay.
Maybe even sooner.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm distracted. I just...
Any clarity?
He's like, yeah, you never said 3 or 5, and I just resent him a text where I said 3 o'clock.
It's anyway. Already started. I love it. Dave's already frustrated.
Dave would say, I have a constipated look right now because he's irritating me already. No, I don't have a slice of gum.
It's not a slice, Dave. It's not bread. It's a stick.
It's called a slice. Like, who cares? I don't have any gum. Leave me alone. That was something that happened at a seminar we were at. So...
Yeah, you got to hear that story at some point, Lefko. It's quality.
It is. Yeah. Well, I'll tell it right now. Okay, we'll get to Will Disley. Yeah, we were doing a football 101 thing, and Sam Atkins was up talking, and then I'm trying to listen to him, and Dave's over there, like, fidgeting around. I can see him out of the corner of my eye. And I'm like, what's he doing? And so all of a sudden he leans over, hey, do you have any gum? You know, and so...
Dave.
And so I turn very slowly towards him, and I say, no. I don't have any bleeping gum. And then I turn back and I'm watching, you know, Sam do his thing. And I can just see Dave out of the corner of my eye staring at me with this look like, what's your problem? And he kept staring at me for like 45 seconds. Finally, I looked back over there. And then that's when he said, it's not called a slice of gum or whatever I call it.
Well, he said that in here. Remember, he was in studio. We brought that story up. And you guys started debating it again, and you said slice of gum. And he goes, it's not a slice. It's a stick.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what he does. And that's what people, when they don't have a good argument, they will attack something that you said, you know, like an ad hominem attack or something like that.
So good.
Yeah, that's what Dave does. Will Disley.
I hope he makes it today.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Well, yeah, it'll be hit or miss. Trust me. This is the guy running our offense, by the way.
This guy was in control at one point.
No, Dave hates it when I compliment him, but I've always said that, like, when the best team I was ever on was, you know, 88, 89, when Dave Craig and Jacob Green were the leaders. And we've had Jacob on this show before.
Yeah.
And I see Jake around every once in a while. Love those two guys. I mean, just like I said, everybody got together, offense, defense, guys from the West Coast, East Coast, black, white, doesn't matter. I mean, it was just a great. And those two guys were sort of they set the tone.
Mm-hmm.
They set the culture. And so that's what made those, you know, really fun teams to be on. We were pretty good. 88, we went to the playoffs. We won the AFC West that year with a 9-7 record. But anyway, yeah, Dave is a great leader and everything. But and Will Disley, you know, I was listening to him. For whatever reason, all of a sudden, like the podcast was on my phone. I don't control my phone very well.
Right.
And all of a sudden I look up and it says Will Disley. And I'm like, okay, I push and listen to, you know, Jake and Stacy interview him. I thought it was interesting. Maybe I'm getting ahead as far as the clips, but he said something about there's lots of answers in this offense.
We'll play that clip next.
Yeah.
He says Waldron's offense is unique and they're going to get some tight ends on the field is what he said. We'll see if this is a clip you're talking about.
Dane's a really smart guy. His offense is really systematic and it has a lot of answers. You know, there's going to be some uniqueness, and the cool part about it is we're going to get some tight ends on the field. You know, I think Gerald and I are going to have a great compliment, and Colby and whoever else steps up, and we're going to create a lot of problems for defenses around the league. You know, we have a really tough division, and I think Shane's ready. He's come prepared, and Russ is picking it up quick. He's excited. It's just there's a newness. There's a new sense of urgency, a new energy, and we're all excited to learn and, you know, get on the field and go operate a little bit. So there's high expectations for our offense always, you know, with Russ leading the charge. And, you know, with the crew that we have, I don't see why we wouldn't be just as dominant as we were last year.
You know, it's funny. We've kind of talked about, you know, you talked about Russ picking it up really quickly. Is there ever a doubt of that? I mean, Russ,
no.
To me, Russ is one of the sharpest quarterbacks that you'll find in the league. I mean, and, you know, and really in history, I mean, he just never looks confused. He always gets it. He's just he's got a very organized mind. You know, the way he does everything is very, you know, measured and lays it out. And so, yeah, I don't worry too much about that. The part that got me excited, and then Stacy asked also, and we've been complaining about it, the lack of targets for the tight ends.
Yep.
And, you know, he talked about him and Gerald Everett getting out there, and he said whoever else steps up. He also mentioned
Colby
Parkinson. You know, I'm hoping maybe that Tyler Mabry guy we talked about, you know, maybe he gets to be develops and is going to be a part of it. But that made me excited. I felt like there's going to be a lot more options for Russ. It's I used to say, leave Russell alone. There was always a slogan about Russell in the offseason. You know, my slogan this year would be, make it easier for Russ.
Yeah.
Make it easier for him. And I feel like that's what this offense is going
to
do.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing it. So good to hear that the tight ends, at least presumably, will be a much bigger part. They didn't set the bar very high last year.
True.
And I don't put that on them. That was just the way the offense was called for whatever reason. But hopefully a much bigger part. Coming up, the bullpen might be back to full strength soon. We'll tell you what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
All right, I think we locked him in. Is Dave Craig set for 3 o'clock?
Yeah, he said, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I got that. My bad. That's what he said.
So, 5 o'clock, eh? No, it'll be 3 o'clock. He will join us at the top of the hour, and hijinks will ensue immediately thereafter.
Yeah, so I got at 2:29. Looks like 5, eh? He said, what does that mean? He said, you said you'd call to say whether 3 or 5 today. I said, 3, with exclamation points. He says, got it. And then I sent him the original text. It says 3 o'clock very clearly.
He's so good.
Yep, I got that. My bad, he says.
All right, so Dave will join us.
I think, folks, I think in about 14 minutes you're going to be hearing Dave Craig's voice,
oh,
I think.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be good. You don't want to miss that. And again, you guys can text in throughout the show, 710-710 to the Mac and Jacks text line. Mean text coming up in the 5 o'clock hour before we turn you over to the Mariners pregame show at 5:30. Oh, and a reminder, we did post the video of Dave Wyman's interception of Dan Marino. If you're on Twitter, you can find it at Wyman and Bob or at Bob Stelton. I retweeted it, so either of those two, at Wyman and Bob, at Bob Stelton. Some interesting comments on the that video.
Yeah, we're getting our quota of mean texts in on the video.
Yeah.
Can I just explain things, okay? First of all.
People love it, too, though.
First of all. I wore the shoulder pads that I was issued, okay? So shut up about the big shoulder pads. Why were they so big? Because those were the ones they gave me, okay? That's how it worked back then. By the way, I have a pair of shoulder pads from when I was done there. They sent me a box. This is like 1996, right?
Mm-hmm.
They sent me a box. It's got my helmet, my shoes, everything out of my locker, my shoulder pads, everything. This is 1996. I'm living in Phoenix area, Scottsdale. I open it, look at it, and then I shut it, and it did not open it again until last summer. And so I opened it up just to see what was in there because I'd forgotten. Been, 25 years or so. So I look in there, and there's the shoulder pad. So we're thinking about bringing those down and putting them on Bob. We're going to put the shoulder pad
to accentuate my tiny head.
If you think my head looked tiny. In those shoulder pads.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah, but, we'll try those on. It'll make you look like you've got an Andre the Giant head compared to mine with those.
Well, and the clip that's on there now, there's other clips. Now, you release whatever, I don't know if you're going to put the other clips up there, you'll see that I was much more of a battering ram than I was a finesse guy. So, yeah, I made a good play. I fooled Dan Marino, okay?
Yeah.
I took a step like I was going to drop back. The only reason I'm defending and, bragging about myself right now is because the run back is so horrible. It's horrific. It's horrific.
Would it have felt as horrific if somebody else tackled you other than Marino?
No. The whole thing is so bad because first of all, you see, I catch the ball cleanly.
Yep.
And then I go to tuck it away and it kind of fumbles. If you look at the video closely, it's like I kind of fumble it. And then I'm paranoid about. I'm just thinking, I better just get out of bounds. So then I kind of run to the side, and I think Marino is running off to go get some Gatorade. And I trip over him or whatever. And then I end up just diving, instead of giving him the old limp leg, I gave him two limp legs.
Yeah.
And I just fell, and then I spiked the ball because I'm like, I know everybody's going to give me a hard time about that run back.
Yeah.
And that was terrible.
And they're giving you a hard time on Twitter.
Yeah.
Start Danny O'Neill immediately. said something about the guy that wouldn't concede about fighting a bear or losing to a bear gets tackled by Dan Marino.
Yeah,
something like
quarterback. Yeah, and it's a shame because it was really probably one of the best plays I made in the NFL, and it all is ruined by a terrible terrible run.
Still
back.
Picked off a Hall of Famer.
My coach came up to me, Tom Catlin, who hardly ever would speak. And he was like, "You are the worst at running with the ball in your hand that I have ever seen." I was like, "Thanks, Tom. Appreciate that."
Nothing about the pick. Nothing about the pick, huh? No. Just the run back. All right.
But like the rest of them that you'll see later, there's lots of battering ram shots, but he's just not a finesse guy. Not really good with the ball in my hand.
You guys can see for yourself if you don't know what we're talking about. If you're on Twitter, at Wyman and Bob, or at Bob Stelton on Twitter, it's there for you.
And make fun of me.
You enjoy the comments. That's even better than the videos, just reading what people were writing about it. So very funny stuff there. The bullpen for the Mariners last night was fantastic. We talked about it. They went 3-plus innings. They didn't give up a single hit. Nope. They didn't give up a run. They didn't walk a single batter, and they struck out three. That's combined. So it was a great night for the bullpen, who had the face plant the other night we were talking about. So very good to see that. And now you've got two names we are very familiar with, and Graveman and Steckenrider are now out of quarantine. Now, Steckenrider is with the team, Graveman in Seattle, and has to be built back up. But hopefully we're going to see those guys soon and add to what was really good last night. It was great to see Montero go in there and be boring, wasn't it? Not to have that anxious. I had tension when he came in. Now, luckily, it was 6-2, so you had a 4-run bulge there to work with. But you still, there's still that weird feeling of, all right, what am I going to see now? How interesting is he going to make this? And it wasn't. It wasn't interesting at all, and I like it.
Yeah, I think you said the three strikeouts. He got two of them.
Yeah, he had two of the three.
Yeah, so he gets a, I don't know if it's a ground out or a fly out, but yeah. And then he gets two Ks. I wrote down, not exciting or entertaining.
Awesome.
That's the way we like it.
Yep, that's just exactly what we want from him.
Very boring. And, you know, we talked about, you know, is Mitch Haniger an all-star? But the one guy we decided on, like, if he hadn't had to go through this quarantine thing, especially Kendall Graveman has been fantastic.
Still hasn't given up a run.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's been kind of one of those guys that everybody – loves on the team, you know, Gravy, Big Heavy, whatever his nickname is. But, yeah, he's had some, like you said, never given up a run yet. So, and not very many hits. So, you know, he had in five appearances before he, you know, went on the IL, he gave up four hits in five appearances and six innings. So, just he's been just money. And, you know, you saw last night, they're kind of hit or miss, you know, and that's the thing. Don't you think it's that way? I always look at, like, the bullpen is kind of like offensive line. Like, people have a tendency to kind of complain about it no matter what. It's not very often. Like, how many of the 30 teams do you think in the 30 Major League Baseball cities where people are like, we love our bullpen. Our bullpen is great. It just seems like it's one of those things that we kind of – you sort of live and die. I mean, we were just talking about how terrible the bullpen was.
Yeah, they had a terrible night. Everybody that came out that night was brutal.
Awful.
That was the rare. We even said it. That was the aberration. Like, the only reason this team was close to 500 even after that game is because of the bullpen.
You're right.
So you allow them a night like that. It wasn't fun to watch, but you go, okay, it happens. And then you have a night like this where they combined 3-plus and not a single hit given up, run, not a walk. It was a great combined effort.
But would you agree with that you think most people –
yeah.
And the thing is, you know, you tend to go the bullpen. Well, it's, you know, two, three, four guys sometimes. And, you know, sometimes it's just one guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, your setup guys, your middle relief guys could have been nails. And then the guy comes in and blows it. And you go, oh, the bullpen gave up the game, or they blew it. So, yeah, they all sort of unfairly at times get lumped in with the failure of one. And it's much more individual versus an offensive line where they're really working together. And if one guy doesn't do his job, it makes everybody look bad. It's kind of that same way where you go, well, the bullpen blew it. Well, the two guys that came in before the closer did a great job. It was the closer that went out there and caked his pants, Dave. So that's how it goes. Typically, you're right. And it's good to see because they've been much more good than they have been bad by a long, long ways this season. If they get those two guys back, that's even better.
By the way, that phrase made its debut on this show during the Fernando Rodney days.
Yeah, that's the feeling I get when he was out there, and a little stomach bubbling when Montero gets out there, too.
That actually makes your stomach bubble.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Coming up, we've been talking about him for the entire first hour. Dave Craig will join us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.